You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Sarah Stevenson Hunter grew up with glaucoma and was partially sighted until age 40, when she lost the rest of her sight in an accident. While recovering from the accident, she came out as a transgender woman and started learning how to express her womanhood through clothing and makeup. Over 10 years on, she now delivers diversity and inclusion training with her company, Simply Equality. She's here today to talk about her sight loss journey and her work. Hi, Sarah.
Hiya. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So, can you tell us more about your sight loss journey?
My actual sight loss comes through a link with a type of arthritis, Still's disease. I was diagnosed, that was 2. Then that led on to uveitis, age 4. Then I had cataracts, age 7. And that surprises some people because you hear the word cataracts and you think old people. And I am, 51. So this was like 40 years ago. And the days when you're in hospital for like 3 weeks per eye for eye surgery, there's no such thing as lens implants or anything. So I had that. And I had lovely thick glasses from that point on. Then going through into my sort of early teens, I developed glaucoma. And between the ages of about 11 and 18, I had 50 eye operations, all sorts of stuff to do with the glaucoma. And then obviously gradually my sight got worse. And then in my early 20s, I started developing problem with my cornea. So I had several corneal infections, couple of corneal transplants, which sadly, due to my arthritis, I have increased issues with rejection. One of those grafts did hold for a year, but then rejected. So I've always had very little vision and had my accident 10 years ago or so. But at that point, I had no vision in my right eye and I had a bit of remaining vision in my left eye. So the accident, whilst it was traumatic, I suppose in a way I was quite lucky because I'd lived with sight loss all my life and it wasn't like a bang overnight going from perfect vision to no vision.
And in the past, you've mentioned always feeling an otherness, which can be quite common among disabled and LGBTQ plus people. Was there kind of an overlap in that feeling between the two parts of your identity? And how did you figure out where that feeling was coming from?
I have always been trans. I didn't really understand it and start exploring it until my early 40s. I would say, I've just described a childhood that involved a lot of hospital visits and surgery, and I had disrupted schooling and everything else. I was growing up in the 70s and 80s when a lot of trans people have already always existed. That word trans, that was no real understanding of what it is, what it means, whatever. So I think my feelings of otherness, I probably initially always understood and knew in terms of my disability, but I also had this nagging sense that, but it's more than that. It's not just my disability. It's something different and deeper than that. But I didn't have the words or the language to express it. And what I would say is my sort of accident, I describe it as my tidal wave moment. By that, I mean, I felt like I'd spent all my life running from these feelings about my gender identity, about who I was, who I wanted to be, who I believed I always had been. But because of family upbringing, I had wonderful, loving parents, but, I grew up in the Northeast. And let's just say it's not necessarily the most diverse or the most progressive in the 70s and 80s. And then I became a Christian when I went to university and I got married and had kids and thought that's what I was meant to do. So I'd been repressing and ignoring these feelings around gender identity, but they never went away. Finally losing all my sight, I'd describe as a bit of a catalyst. I spent all this time running from these feelings and it was exhausting. And I just got to a point in life where like, do you know what? I can't run anymore. I don't want to run anymore. And so I metaphorically decided I'm going to stop running. I'm going to stand still. I'm going to let this tidal wave catch up with me, let it crash over me, and I'm either going to drown or I'm going to be able to pick myself up and think, right, what now? And I knew being trans would mean I would have a lot to lose. I just knew that the feelings I'd had and has had for many, many years, they weren't going away. And actually, I didn't want them to go away because it was part of who I am as a person. And so as painful as that journey was, I made that decision to start exploring it and see where it took me. And for me, it meant going through the process of full social and medical transition. Not everyone who's trans wants to or has to go through that process. It's not like a linear process. But for me, that's what I knew I had to do. And so I did. That meant my marriage broke up. I had a difficult period with my kids for quite a few years. And also, there I was, newly, totally blind, having never lived on my own since university, having to adjust to life on my own as somebody who's totally blind, and also navigating the world of gender transition and all that meant.
And was the information about socially and medically transitioning available to you in an accessible way?
Let's face it, this is only 10 years ago, but the accessibility of the medical information was pretty non-existent. We did have the internet and I joined some online support groups, but in terms of the actual information on the process of treatment and what that was going to mean, you know, I'll give you an example. So my second appointment at the gender clinic, they give you this 50-page questionnaire. It's quite intrusive. It goes through everything to do with your sexual history, relationships, mental health. It's very thorough, but that was 50 pages of print. There was no electronic version. Luckily, I was able to get a friend I trusted to help me fill that in. But, you know, that's deeply personal, sensitive, intimate information. If I didn't have a friend I trusted, it would have been really hard. And also, the last page of the questionnaire is this diagram of the body from head to toe. And you have to go through talking about how you feel about parts of the body. So again, that was very visual. So if I hadn't had somebody to help me fill it in, that would have been difficult. I had a great experience at the gender clinic, but I also feel like whilst I was navigating my own feelings and thoughts and expression of gender identity, I was also teaching them, some of the specialists, the psychologists, because they'd never had a blind trans person before through the clinic. So when it came to things like, how do you see yourself? How do you feel you would express your femininity? All of that sort of stuff. We guided each other. And whilst I'm happy to do that, I think that's a failing within that service. Yes, they're experts on gender identity, but they don't really have an understanding about other aspects around disability, in my case, visual impairment. So it wasn't easy, but luckily it was a supportive process and I got through it in the end.
You began expressing your womanhood through clothing and makeup. How did you develop your personal style and how would you describe it?
I would never claim to be fashionable because fashion is such a fickle thing. It's ever changing. How have I found my style? Experimentation. I think one of the things of being trans, particularly a trans woman, you know, I came out in my 40s. Obviously, I hadn't gone through sort of female puberty and I hadn't had that experience that women who aren't trans, you know, you've got your whole life to experiment and make those mistakes as a young woman or a girl and everything else. So it's all contracted into a very short period as a trans woman. I guess I just experimented with A, what I felt comfortable wearing in terms of types of material. I love sort of soft cottons, silks. I like stuff that's quite fitted because I'm quite lucky. I am quite tall. I'm quite curvy. And it's like, why not? I'm going to show that off. This is me and I'm proud of it. So it's taken a bit of experimentation. I am now 51. So, you know, I'm not trying to be anything I'm not in terms of how I look, but I like wearing stuff that makes me feel good. I do wear dresses, I do wear skirts, I also wear trousers. Like any of us, it depends whether I'm going out for a night out, whether I've got an important meeting at work. I mean, it's really interesting because, you know, I came out as trans when I had no vision, so I've never seen myself as Sarah, as me, as I am now. And that does make me slightly paranoid, and I do have to check with my wife. I got remarried a few years ago. She's my number one. I said, do I look okay? She's like, yeah, of course you do. I'll tell you. But I describe my style as sort of quite classic. I do wear makeup, but I don't go over the top. Don't always wear it. Because, you know, one of the things that I'm sure we all realise is that whether you're male, female, trans, whatever, there's so many different ways to express who you are and how you feel about yourself in terms of what you wear and whether you do or don't wear makeup and all sorts of stuff. So I'm still on that journey, but I'm told I have quite a classy style, which I'm happy with.
That's the best feedback you can get.
Totally. I mean, I have to say, I had a lot of help from... So when I first came out at work, a lot of my female colleagues, they were the first ones that I trusted to help me order stuff online and trial and error. And I've had some really great feedback, so that's good.
And now, 10 years on, you've founded and are the co-director of Simply Equality. What do you do at Simply Equality?
Simply Equality is a social enterprise. It's myself and another non-binary trans person who's also disabled, different disabilities to me. I formed Simply Equality because from my own experience, I'd lived as a disabled person all my life. I knew what it meant to be disabled. I knew that world. I knew the language. I knew the barriers. And I sort of had this idea that coming out as trans, you know, going into the world of LGBT equality, that, okay, there'll be some differences, but I'll inherently understand what it means. I was right and I was wrong. And the more you dig into equality work, the more you realize too much of it is about, well, there's race over here and there's LGBT over there and there's disability there and there's gender there. And actually, every single one of us, we're all a complex mix of different parts of our identities. And I didn't see enough that was focusing on, well, what if you're disabled and LGBTQ plus within the disability community? There are people who aren't as positive about LGBT issues as they could be. Similarly, within the LGBT community, you know, there is ableism and there's all sorts of issues. So I set up Simply Equality to try and break down some of those barriers. I found myself giving talks, doing training. And I was like, well, actually, you know, I've been privileged. I've been lucky. I've had good jobs. Although I've gone through quite a bit of stuff through my transition, I'm quite fortunate with it. So why not use my experience? And I try and describe the work of Simply Equality as bringing the humanity behind the headlines, because I'm sure your listeners will be aware that particularly at the minute, the whole issue of transness and all these discussions around wokeness and everything else, there's a lot of heated, toxic, so-called debate. And I think we forget that we're people. I, Sarah, I'm a person. Yes, I'm trans. Yes, I'm blind, but I'm a person. And I think we get so wound up in some of the sort of theoretical, academic, intellectual discussions, which are important, of course they are, but we forget that we're people. And if you're disabled, if you're LGBTQ+, you want employers, you want educators to understand what's it like to have to navigate the world with these intersecting identities and areas of oppression. So yeah, Simply Equality, I do talks, we have a podcast, simplyequality.com. If you go there, you'll find it. And in that podcast, you know, I try and foreground the lived experiences of other disabled and LGBTQ plus people, because I really believe that we all have a story to tell. Stories are powerful vehicles for sharing our experiences. And whilst each one of our experiences is unique to us, there are themes, there are elements that we can all learn from. And also, yes, we're here to make money, but as a social enterprise, you know, we commit to giving back at least half of that money to the wider disability and LGBTQ plus community.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah Stevenson-Hunter, founder of Simply Equality, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.